This is Dr. Meredith Griffin, licensed psychologist and clinical supervisor with Omni Behavioral Health's Intensive Treatment Mobility Services, or ITMS, and this is a program that serves individuals with developmental disabilities throughout the state of Nebraska. The title of this webinar is Sensory Processing Disorder, Characteristics, Causes, and Treatment. The agenda of this webinar includes defining sensory processing disorder, or SPD, discussing causes of SPD, discussing types of SPD, discussing types of sensory input, discussing how SPD can present as behavioral problems and/or mental health problems, reviewing treatment options for SPD, and directing you to a few videos to review and apply the information obtained in today's webinar. What is sensory processing? Well, sensory processing is the method by which the nervous system, which is the brain and spinal cord, receives messages from the senses and environment and transforms the messages into responses. And by senses, we're talking about taste, touch, smell, sight, hearing, and two other senses. That is the proprioceptive sense and the vestibular sense. For example, a person with intact sensory processing may close the blinds if the sunlight is too bright. This would be considered an adaptive response. A maladaptive response could be a person screaming and hiding under the table if the sunlight is too bright coming in through the window. This could indicate possibly a problem with sensory processing. Sensory integration involves four steps. It's actually a rather complicated process. It starts with receiving sensory stimuli through the various senses. The second stage is interpreting that sensory stimuli. The third stage is processing that sensory stimuli and formulating a response to that sensory stimuli. Maybe the stimuli is too intense or not intense enough. And the last step is adaptively responding to the sensory stimuli. A person with intact sensory processing can automatically filter out unimportant sensory stimuli. This person can ignore sensory input that is not important and pay attention to sensory input that is important. Sensory processing disorder, or SPD, used to be called sensory integration dysfunction. The acronym was SID, or SID, and that was confused with sudden infant death syndrome. So SPD occurs when messages from the senses are misinterpreted. Maybe they're too tense or they're not intense enough, and these messages do not get transformed into appropriate responses. The person is not receiving accurate information about the environment, and they are not able to respond appropriately to the environment. SPD prevents parts of the brain from receiving the information needed to correctly interpret and respond to information received from the senses. Jean Ayers is an occupational therapist who was one of the first to start writing about SPD. And she described SPD as a neurological traffic jam in your head with conflicting signals coming from all directions so that you don't know how to make sense of it all. So a person with SPD cannot filter out unimportant stimuli. A person with SPD takes in all sensory stimuli, and it can feel overwhelming and almost like being assaulted by competing stimuli. A person with SPD cannot ignore any stimuli. It is all interpreted as equally important. What causes SPD? Well, the specific causes of SPD are unknown. However, it is likely caused by a combination of both genetic and environmental factors. Biological factors, which are impacted by genetics, include atypical brain structure and functioning. Environmental factors include maternal deprivation, premature birth, prenatal malnutrition, and institutional care. Examples of maternal deprivation include a lack of bundling, minimal handling, and propping bottles for feeding instead of holding the baby. Approximately 78% of people diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, or ASD, are diagnosed with SPD. However, most people with SPD do not meet criteria for a diagnosis of ASD. What are the three types of SPD? The three types are sensory defensiveness, sensory modulation, and sensory registration. Sensory modulation is typically the area that is addressed first in treatment. and treatment is typically administered by a licensed occupational therapist. All types of SPD can involve hypersensitivity and hyposensitivity. Also, a person with SPD may be hypersensitive in one sense and hyposensitive in another sense. So let's talk about a person with hypersensitivity. That person is over-responsive to sensory input. That person tends to respond more quickly and intensely to sensory input, and overall they tend to avoid sensory input. A person who is hyposensitive to sensory input is under-responsive. That person typically craves and seeks sensory input. A person with hyposensitivity also takes longer to respond to sensory input. They may need longer or more intense exposure before they're able to respond to sensory input. During preparation for this webinar, I found several quotes that were put together by people experiencing hypersensitivity within a diagnosis of SPD. The first quote is, "There are certain things I touch that hurt my hands. There are times when I walk and the air brushing past my hands is a source of pain." This person is describing a neutral or benign stimuli, which is air, becoming painful to her hands. And that's important to take into account, that sensory stimuli that we would think is neutral or benign may not be experienced that way in somebody who has SPD, specifically who is hypersensitive in one of their senses. The second quote is, "The fear and anticipation of noises that hurt the ears is often the cause of many bad behaviors and tantrums." This person is referring to problematic behaviors occurring in response to not being able to predict and control exposure to painful stimuli. The third quote is, "I hate to feel my own skin against itself. This means I have to wear pajamas to bed or put a sheet in between my legs so they do not come into direct contact with each other." This person is talking about being hypersensitive in terms of what touches her skin. She does not want her skin to touch other body parts, so she's protecting her skin from that actually happening. When I explain hyposensitivity, I often use the example of your foot falling asleep. And think about your response when you notice that your foot has fallen asleep. The first thing you try to do is wake it up, either by stomping it or tapping it. This is because a sleeping foot is uncomfortable or painful. Well, this is how people with SPD and hyposensitivity experience their bodies, as uncomfortable and painful, because they're not getting enough sensory input or they're under-responsive to sensory input. I also found several quotes from people with SPD experiencing hyposensitivity when I was preparing for this webinar. The first quote is, "My senses would sometimes become dull to the point that I could not clearly see or hear, and the world around me would seemingly cease to exist." So this person is talking about having hyposensitivity in the sense of vision as well as hearing. The second quote is, "Oftentimes I would be aware that my body hurt somewhere, but I would be unable to pinpoint what was hurting." This can happen in people with hyposensitivity who have SPD, and this refers to the fact that they may experience pain in their bodies, but they are unable to determine what part of the body is hurting. And this can have some implications when seeking medical care. The third quote is, "I never knew my relative position in the surrounding area or situation. I had no concept of my body. My hands were mere objects which I used to pick and throw." This person is talking about the sense of proprioception, which is the awareness of your body parts in space, and that awareness is relative to the environment. This person is unaware how her body relates to the environment. Now, if I asked all of you to tell me where your right foot was, or maybe your left hand or your head, you would be able to tell me without looking. However, a person with hyposensitivity in the area of proprioception is not able to give you an answer about where their body parts are located without actively looking for those body parts. So they do not understand how their body parts actually relate to their environments around them. Sensory defensiveness is a type of SPD that entails a person perceiving neutral or benign sensory stimuli as irritating or painful. Think about the previous quote in which a person wrote that air brushing past their hands is a source of pain. Sensory defensiveness can impact one or more types of sensory input and ranges in severity. For example, a person with mild tactile defensiveness may be irritated by short tags or specific types of fabric and may prefer not to wear clothes altogether. Another example includes a person with severe oral motor defensiveness who may exhibit agitation or problematic behavior in response to being asked to eat something or brush their teeth. Other types of sensory defensiveness include discomfort or a fear of movement, hypersensitivity to loud or common noises, for example, a hairdryer, a barking dog, dislike of various textures or temperatures of food, and an aversion to sunlight or fluorescent lights. People with sensory defensiveness generally become easily upset and require lengthy periods of time to calm. Additionally, antecedents to changes in emotions may appear unpredictable. Changes in mood and a person's exhibition of problematic behavior may seem to occur out of the blue. People's tolerance for sensory input and their needs for sensory input change on a daily basis. Tolerance for sensory input can be impacted by sleep, health status, as well as noticing different sensory input that other people don't notice. So the fact that this person is noticing sensory input that somebody else doesn't notice, and if this input is aversive or painful, it may appear that their change in emotion or exhibition of problematic behavior is out of the blue. It's also important to keep in mind that sensory stimuli that is aversive one day may not be aversive the next day. Similarly, sensory stimuli that is pleasurable one day may not be pleasurable the next day. Sensory modulation is another type of SPD. Modulation is the brain's ability to regulate its level of activity. It also refers to the ability to maintain an optimal level of attention and arousal, or alertness, in order to learn and effectively respond to the demands of a task. For example, some people may use compensatory behaviors to help them maintain attention during a lengthy lecture or meeting. Examples of compensatory behaviors include using a squeeze ball or doodling. People with modulation difficulties may exhibit hyperactivity and distractibility, as well as lethargy and passivity. They may also fluctuate between these two extremes throughout the day. These fluctuations may actually resemble a mental health disorder, such as bipolar disorder. There are three levels of arousal. These levels of arousal pertain to modulation. A high level of arousal is characterized by a person who is unable to sit still, hyperactive, impulsive, distractible, has poor concentration, speaks quickly and loudly, engages in risky behaviors, is unable to calm for sleep, is intense or hypersensitive, has difficulty making transitions, managing stress, and adapting to changes in a daily routine. Symptoms of a high level of arousal overlap with a diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. A low level of arousal is characterized by somebody who is lethargic, moves slowly and avoids physical activity, is hard to wake in the morning or after a nap, appears to lack interest in all aspects of daily living, and demonstrates limited facial expressions. A person with a low level of arousal may also look to exhibit symptoms of attention deficit disorder as well as depression. An optimal level of arousal is the goal of treatment. A person with an optimal level of arousal maintains attention and concentration to tasks. That person engages in appropriate and meaningful interactions with others and the environment. That person maintains eye contact and adapts to stressful situations and changes in their daily routine. They also demonstrate self-control. Sensory registration is the third type of SPD. Sensory registration refers to the ability to notice and process sensory input, as well as generate adaptive responses. People with registration difficulties exhibit hyposensitivity and/or hypersensitivity to sensory input. They also exhibit an impaired ability to differentiate between sensations. For example, a person with difficulties in registration would be unable to use their hands, which is the tactile sense, to identify objects placed in a bag without viewing the objects in the bag. Another example includes a person being unable to identify which part of their body was touched if they did not actually see the other person touching them. This is also the tactile sense. What are the different types of sensory input? There are 7 different types of sensory input, and those 7 types are proprioception, vestibular, tactile or touch, auditory, visual, oral motor, and olfactory or smell. Again, please keep in mind that what is aversive to one person may not be aversive to another person. Similarly, what is pleasurable for one person may not be pleasurable for another person. Stimuli that is expected to cause an aversive response includes nails on a chalkboard. However, unexpected stimuli that is typically thought of as neutral or benign, such as a cool breeze, may also be aversive for somebody. Expect the unexpected. Let go of how you perceive and interpret sensory input. Sensory processing and SPD are highly individualized. SPD can impact more than one sense in a person. Also, a person may be hypersensitive in one sense and be hyposensitive in another sense. The symptoms of SPD exist on a spectrum. We all have sensory needs. We all find some sensory input enjoyable and other types of sensory input as aversive.
The sense of proprioception refers to information about body position and movement being sent to the brain by receptors in the muscles and joints without using vision. In other words, proprioception allows you to know where your body parts are in space without actively looking for them. For example, think about sitting in a chair with your feet on the floor. You are receiving information about the location of your feet from the floor, and you are receiving information about your buttocks and the back of your legs from the chair. Information regarding proprioception is also created by the stretching and contracting of muscles, as well as the pulling and compression of joints between bones. A person with a hypersensitive sense of proprioception avoids movement of joints and muscles, as well as anything that stimulates joints and large muscles. Other signs of hypersensitivity include someone who avoids being upside down, exhibits difficulty manipulating small objects, and avoids weight-bearing activities such as running and jumping. Signs of hyposensitivity includes stomping feet while walking, hitting body parts against objects such as walls and furniture, hitting objects against other objects, seeking heavy blankets, enjoying being wrapped tightly in blankets, preferring tight clothing such as spandex, tight socks, and headbands, chewing on objects, and grinding teeth. Other signs of hyposensitivity include giving bear hugs, crashing into walls, clumsiness and fear when climbing, as well as cracking one's knuckles, neck, or back.
The vestibular sense involves receptors located within the inner ear to provide information to the brain about where the body is located in relation to gravity, whether or not the body is in motion, how fast the body is moving, and in what direction the body is moving. Vestibular processing also influences balance, equilibrium, postural control, and muscle tone. I often use 2 examples to illustrate some difficulties in vestibular processing. The first example includes the experience of sitting in a parked car and observing the car next to you move. Think about the typical response. Typically, a person is startled because they don't expect to be moving, yet they feel as if they are. So imagine having this type of experience throughout the day, where something near you moves, you think you're moving, but you're actually not, and you're quite startled. The other example involves thinking about a time when maybe you had a sinus infection or a head cold, something that caused your ears to get clogged. Typically, when we have problems with our ears, we experience dizziness and nausea. So imagine somebody with vestibular processing difficulties being somewhat nauseated or dizzy throughout the day, and also imagine them not being able to predict when they're going to feel that way. A person with a hypersensitive vestibular sense typically avoids swings, trampolines, merry-go-rounds, roller coasters, and other activities with fast movement. A person with a hypersensitive vestibular sense may also avoid elevators, escalators. They may also exhibit a startle response if others move in close proximity, and they are generally prone to motion sickness. A person with a hyposensitive vestibular sense seeks movement. That person seeks activities such as slides and swings with fast movement. A person with a hypersensitive vestibular sense may also spin without getting dizzy. They may also fidget or move. They may also run, jump, hop, or skip versus walking. A person with a hyposensitive vestibular sense may also rock, bounce their legs, or hum when participating in seated events. The tactile sense, or sense of touch, involves receptors that are located under the skin and send information to the brain about light touch, pain, temperature, and pressure. This plays an important role in perceiving the environment as well as generating protective reactions. For example, think about a person with a high tolerance for pain. This person may not be able to detect that something is going on with their body, something that is unhealthy, until the problem is more severe and treatment is more difficult. Pain sends us an important message. A person with a hypersensitive tactile sense is often sensitive to light touch. For example, that person may be bothered by various textures of clothing or tags, as well as seams in clothing. A person with a hypersensitive tactile sense may also avoid personal hygiene tasks, such as brushing their hair, drying their hair, bathing or showering, brushing their teeth, shaving, and cutting their fingernails and toenails. Also, a person with a hypersensitive tactile sense may avoid physical affection, such as hugs and pats on the back. A person with a hyposensitive tactile sense is constantly touching things in the environment. For example, this person might constantly touch other people and surfaces with various textures, such as glass, walls, chalkboards, and sandpaper. A person with a hyposensitive tactile sense may enjoy messy activities such as finger painting. They may also seek rough play, for example, wrestling. A person with a hyposensitive tactile sense often seeks deep pressure, for example, squeezes into tight places and lays under heavy mattresses or heavy blankets. This person may also seek vibration via massager or vibrating pillows and/or cushions. Additionally, a person with a hyposensitive tactile sense has a high tolerance for pain and does not generally notice injuries unless they are severe. The auditory sense involves the ability to perceive and understand sound in the environment. There is a difference between listening and hearing. Listening is an active process and requires motivation, while hearing is the passive reception of sound. A person with a hypersensitive auditory sense may become fearful or anxious of common sounds. They may also become agitated when the environment gets loud. Signs of agitation may include crying and putting their hands over their ears. Other signs of hypersensitivity in the auditory sense include being easily distracted by sounds, avoiding objects that make background noise, such as a refrigerator, a fan, or a heater, avoiding large crowds, such as a movie theater, a parade, or a party, and avoiding specific people due to the sound of their voice. For example, I once introduced myself to a person with a developmental disability as well as SPD, and I did not know that the sound of high-pitched women's voices would cause him pain. When I introduced myself to him, he began to cry and he pulled my hair. This happened in response to me causing him pain and him being unable to formulate an adaptive response. A person with a hyposensitive auditory sense may be unresponsive to their name being called. They may emit various sounds or vocalizations such as blowing raspberries, humming, clicking, or clucking, or growling. A person with a hyposensitive auditory sense may also play the radio or television at a high volume. They may exhibit difficulty understanding and following through on one-step instructions, and they may exhibit confusion regarding the source of a sound. The visual sense refers to the ability to process visual information, for example, attending to and following moving objects, scanning the environment, sustaining eye contact with a person or on an object, shifting one's gaze between objects, and eye-hand and eye-foot coordination. A person with hypersensitivity in the visual field often exhibits sensitivity to bright light or fluorescent light, difficulty reading high contrast materials, for example, black on white, is distracted by visual stimuli in close proximity, rubs their eyes or their eyes water while watching television, complains of headaches after reading or watching television, and avoids eye contact with others. A person with hyposensitivity in the visual sense often gravitates toward bright light and or blinking lights, stares at objects, particularly moving objects, is fascinated with mirrors or shiny objects, has difficulty differentiating between similar letters, has difficulty finding an object among other objects, has difficulty distinguishing between colors, shapes, and sizes, has difficulty assembling puzzles, copying shapes, and cutting and tracing lines, and has difficulty judging spatial relationships in the environment. For example, a person with difficulty in this area may have a misstep on a set of stairs. The oral motor sense refers to the ability to interpret and organize input, for example, taste and texture of food, in and throughout the mouth. A person with hypersensitivity in the oral motor sense may exhibit a limited repertoire of preferred foods due to taste, texture, and temperature. More specifically, a person may avoid foods with mixed textures as well as hot or cold foods. A person may also prefer soft food versus crunchy foods. A person may also prefer bland or unseasoned food and may avoid spicy, sweet, sour, bitter, or salty food. Additionally, a person with hypersensitivity in the oral motor sense may exhibit difficulty using a straw, may chew food excessively before swallowing, and may avoid having their gums and teeth cleaned. A person with hyposensitivity in the oral motor sense may lick, taste, and chew inedible objects, may prefer spicy, sweet, bitter, sour, and/or spicy food, may excessively use condiments and/or seasonings on foods, and may prefer a vibrating toothbrush. Additionally, a person with hyposensitivity in the oral motor sense may eat frozen food, crunchy food, or extremely hot food. The olfactory sense, or sense of smell, refers to the ability to perceive and distinguish between odors. A person with a hypersensitive olfactory sense is easily distressed or nauseated by odors generally undetected by others, talks about or tells others about their odors, dislikes others or places, for example, the zoo or the YMCA, with distinctive odors, and may refuse to eat foods due to their odors. A person with a hyposensitive olfactory sense may be unresponsive to pleasant odors, such as spoiled garbage or spoiled food, may be unable to identify various odors, for example, sweet, floral, fruity, or musky, may be excessively and repetitively smelling objects, and may be attracted to strong odors, such as perfumes or colognes. Because a person with hyposensitivity in the olfactory sense is unresponsive to pleasant odors, this can put them at risk for consuming poisonous substances. Poisonous substances tend to have unpleasant odors as a warning that the substances are in fact poisonous. Various other problems are often associated with SPD. For example, a person with SPD may experience motor coordination problems, such as clumsiness. This person may bump into objects as well as experience more accidents resulting in injuries than a person without SPD. Motor planning problems are also common, and examples include difficulty participating in sports, such as being unable to catch a ball, writing legibly, maintaining balance, using eating utensils, riding a bike, clapping, or getting dressed. Additionally, a person with motor planning problems may not show a hand preference by the age of 5. They may, in fact, switch between hands. Further, they may throw a ball with 2 hands versus using 1 hand. Another example includes a child playing at a playground, and he loses his balance and begins to fall. Because his nervous system does not recognize the sensory input that he is falling, he does not put out his arms to break his fall. Poor muscle tone commonly occurs with SPD. A child with poor muscle tone is often described as a wet noodle. Examples of poor muscle tone include slouching, resting their head on their hands or arm while working at a desk or table, difficulty opening and closing items, for example, turning doorknobs and unlocking doors, or exhibiting poor posture and leaning to one side. Poor eye-hand coordination is also associated with SPD, and examples include difficulty cutting a straight line, difficulty catching a ball, difficulty tying their shoes or fastening buttons. Further, a person with SPD often experiences difficulty in acquiring and utilizing appropriate social skills. For example, a person may engage in isolation and withdrawal, as well as aggression and bossiness. Also, a person may exhibit difficulty initiating and maintaining friendships, as well as demonstrating empathy for others. Being unable to initiate and maintain friendships may lead to depression. Lastly, it is common for a person with SPD to exhibit difficulty understanding their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors in response to sensory stimuli. SPD often mimics behavioral problems. For example, a person with SPD may exhibit agitation, noncompliance, or problematic behavior such as aggression during transitions between environments, for example, between home and school, as well as activities. It is also common for a person with SPD to exhibit agitation, noncompliance, or problematic behavior in response to prompts or participation in getting dressed, brushing their teeth, taking a shower, shaving, eating or drinking, and retiring for bed. These difficulties may, in fact, be due to problems in the areas of the tactile sense, olfactory sense, or proprioceptive sense. In fact, these prompts may represent being asked to do something painful for that person, and that person is attempting to avoid pain by exhibiting problematic behavior, and they're also giving you the message that they may be experiencing pain by demonstrating agitation or a lack of cooperation. A person with SPD may also exhibit low frustration tolerance, as evidenced by problematic behavior in response to not getting their way, as well as being asked to participate in difficult tasks. Problematic behavior may serve the function of regulating sensory input. For example, a person may engage in self-injury such as scratching, skin picking, or headbanging to increase sensory input. Another example includes a person engaging in pica, that is, chewing on rocks or other inedible objects, to increase sensory input. Another example includes a person engaging in property destruction, such as hitting objects with other objects, to increase sensory input. All of those examples demonstrate problematic behaviors are functioning to increase sensory input. An example of a person using problematic behavior to avoid or decrease sensory input includes a person engaging in verbal aggression, such as yelling or screaming, physical aggression, such as hitting or pushing, or elopement, leaving an area. All of these problematic behaviors may serve to avoid or decrease unpleasant or adverse sensory input. I once worked with a young man, approximately 25 years old, who exhibited tactile defensiveness regarding the texture of clothing. Every day, he would disrobe and exit his home in his underwear and run throughout the neighborhood. He exhibited no concern for his personal safety regarding traffic, and unfortunately, he was mislabeled as having inappropriate sexual behavior. However, the real issue was clothing was painful for him, and to avoid the pain, he removed his clothing. We were able to get to the root of the issue after an evaluation by an occupational therapist. Ultimately, the types of fabrics with which his clothing was made were changed, and he greatly decreased disrobing and running throughout the neighborhood. Overall, a person with SPD uses problematic behavior to control the sensory input they are receiving from the environment. Antecedents may be difficult to discern, and oftentimes problematic behavior seems to occur out of the blue. However, a person's sensory processing may not be immediately observable to other people. It may be an internal process, and by the time the person has had enough sensory stimulation and tries to reduce it, or they've not had enough and they're trying to increase it, you may see the exhibition of problematic behavior. Problematic behavior typical of somebody with SPD includes pica. Again, that is the eating of inedible objects. Problematic behavior also includes verbal aggression, physical aggression, property destruction, self-injurious behavior, inappropriate sexual behavior, and elopement. SPD often mimics mental health problems. A person with SPD may exhibit various signs and symptoms of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, also referred to as ADHD. For example, a person with SPD may exhibit hyperactivity, distractibility, and impulsivity. Additionally, a person with SPD may start various tasks but never complete a task. Other characteristics associated with ADHD as well as SPD include jumping from one's seat, blurting answers, not paying attention, acting without thinking, not being able to focus on one activity at a time, and being distracted by sights, sounds, smells, and movement that are seen. ADHD and SPD are different in terms of the parts of brain that are impacted. The sensory region of the brain is impacted with SPD, and the frontal lobe of the brain is impacted with ADHD. It is important to make the distinction between ADHD and SPD because the treatment approaches vary. Typically, psychostimulants are prescribed to treat ADHD. Psychostimulants are not appropriate in the treatment of SPD and will not typically have a positive impact on signs and symptoms of SPD. Intermittent explosive disorder, or IED, may also be confused with SPD. For example, a person with SPD exhibits aggressive behavior that is grossly disproportionate to any precipitating stimuli. This is one of the criteria for a diagnosis of IED. However, a person with SPD may be experiencing a buildup of sensory information, and prior to explosive behavior such as aggression, people were unaware of the antecedents to that explosive behavior. Therefore, it can look like IED. The person's response, perhaps aggression, is grossly disproportionate to any identifiable antecedents in the environment. Obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD, also includes signs and symptoms that overlap with characteristics of somebody with SPD. For example, a person with SPD may exhibit rigidity regarding their daily routine and the organization of their environment. This is because they are trying to control the type and intensity of sensory input they experience throughout their day. So, for example, somebody might be very particular about the types of clothing that they wear. But this is not due to obsessive compulsive disorder. This is due to a need to avoid aversive pain. Obsessive compulsive disorder is also characterized by obsessions, which are thoughts, as well as compulsions, which are behaviors, to decrease the obsessive thoughts that are causing anxiety. This is not typically the case with SPD. A person is thinking about avoiding sensory input that causes them pain. They're also thinking about sensory input that increases the stimulation. Oppositional defiant disorder also includes symptoms that overlap with characteristics of a person with SPD. For example, a person with SPD may ignore or exhibit agitation or problematic behavior in response to prompts to get dressed, brush their teeth, take a shower, shave, eat or drink, or retire for bed. However, the issue is not about being oppositional. The issue is about avoiding averse sensory input. For example, I once worked with a young man who preferred to take a shower versus a bath, and this was not about being oppositional or uncooperative. This was about him having a preference for specific sensory stimuli and avoiding sensory stimuli that was unpleasant for him. A person with SPD may appear to exhibit anxiety. This is due to anticipating the experience of unpleasant or painful sensory stimuli. For example, a person with SPD may exhibit resistance to unfamiliar experiences, such as trying new foods, meeting new people, participating in different activities, or sleeping in a new environment. A particular anxiety disorder diagnosis includes generalized anxiety disorder, and this is commonly confused with SPD or diagnosed instead of SPD. The person is trying to avoid negative sensory stimuli rather than being concerned about various components of their life or being excessively worried about various components of their life. Consistent with depression, a person with SPD may exhibit low self-esteem, social isolation, and withdrawal. Also, a person with SPD may exhibit lethargy, psychomotor slowing, disinterest in all aspects of daily living, and blunted facial expressions. It is important to acknowledge that depression and SPD overlap in terms of symptom presentation. And again, distinguishing a mental health problem versus SPD has great implications for treatment. Typically, mental health problems include medication management and behavioral interventions, and neither of those approaches is appropriate for somebody with SPD. SPD also resembles bipolar disorder. For example, a person with SPD may exhibit problems with self-regulation, as evidenced by mood instability, difficulty maintaining an optimal level of arousal, and difficulty calming. The differences in mood may be due to responding to sensory stimuli and trying to increase or decrease sensory stimuli. This is very different than the changes in mood, that is depression and mania, associated with bipolar disorder. Mood changes with bipolar disorder are chemically based, whereas mood changes in SPD are due to the experience of sensory stimuli. SPD may also give the appearance of psychosis. A person with SPD may be responding to sensory input other people without SPD do not experience and are unable to corroborate. Essentially, the definition of a hallucination is a sensory experience that cannot be corroborated by others. However, hallucinations affect only five senses, which include hearing, vision, taste, touch, and smell, with hearing and vision being the most commonly impacted. SPD includes two other senses, that is the proprioceptive sense and the vestibular sense. A person with SPD may appear to be responding to stimuli that cannot be corroborated by others. However, they are in fact responding to real sensory stimuli in the environment. Superficial descriptions of people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, intermittent explosive disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, anxiety, depression, and bipolar disorder are often similar to people with SPD. People with SPD exhibit additional symptoms, however, such as hyposensitivity and hypersensitivity in regard to sensory input. Medication and behavioral modification strategies are effective for people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, intermittent explosive disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, anxiety, depression, and bipolar disorder. However, they are ineffective for people with SPD. What are some assessment and diagnostic issues for SPD? An accurate diagnosis is essential in treatment planning. An accurate diagnosis allows the correct treatment to be chosen and implemented. The incorrect treatment approach could create more problems for the person with SPD. Accurate diagnosis is also important in terms of funding for research, insurance coverage, and communication among various medical providers. Early diagnosis is also important. Early intervention leads to better outcomes. Children typically have immature or plastic brains, which enables them to change more quickly. In fact, their brains are actually changing in their structure and functioning. Older children and adults take longer to respond to treatment for SPD, and their brains may not be actively changing. Older children and adults learn more adaptive responses regarding sensory stimuli. However, their brains are much less likely to actually change regarding the structure and functioning. Early diagnosis and treatment may also prevent other problems associated with SPD from developing. Occupational therapists are responsible for first identifying SPD. Assessment of SPD must be completed by a licensed occupational therapist with experience in SPD. Assessments of SPD include sensory integration and praxis tests, also referred to as SIPT, the sensory profile, the short sensory profile, the sensory processing measure, and the Sensory Integration Inventory Revised for Individuals with Developmental Disabilities. In addition to these paper and pencil measures that are often completed by people who know the individual suspected of having SPD, the occupational therapist will also complete a direct assessment of the person suspected of having SPD. It is important to be aware that SPD is often misdiagnosed. As we mentioned earlier, the symptoms and signs of SPD often overlap with behavioral problems and mental health problems. Also, health professionals are not trained to recognize SPD. SPD is also difficult to quantify due to variable and dissimilar symptom presentation across people. Research is being conducted to clarify the specific physiology, symptomatology, and effective treatments regarding SPD. People with SPD often develop coping strategies to mask symptoms of SPD. For example, a person may avoid aversive sensory stimuli, and you may not observe an inappropriate response to aversive sensory stimuli. Lastly, SPD is not included as a specific diagnosis in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 5th edition. Mental health professionals, however, are hopeful it will be included in the future editions. What are treatment options for SPD? A variety of treatment options exist for people with SPD. Please keep in mind all caregivers need to be involved. Additionally, the length of treatment varies with each person. It could last as long as many years. There is also no cure for SPD. If SPD is not treated, difficulties in the following areas may occur: performing activities of daily living, motor clumsiness, behavioral problems, anxiety, depression, school failure, such as learning problems and academic problems, employment problems, and social isolation. It is essential to pay attention to the environment of a person with SPD to reduce or eliminate aversive stimuli. Additionally, it is also important to pay attention to how the person is increasing their own sensory stimuli. Specific treatments include education being provided to the person with SPD and their caregivers regarding SPD, including the symptoms and treatment approaches. This can decrease the stigma associated with SPD. Another treatment option includes environmental modifications. For example, providing the person with SPD with a quiet area or a sensory room with appropriate stimulation to provide appropriate sensory input, as well as provide a break from unpleasant or painful sensory input. It is important to increase the control of a person with SPD over their sensory input, such as encouraging the person to take breaks from sensory input or use earplugs or headphones to reduce auditory input. This is just one example of many. An increase of anxiety may occur with a lack of control over the environment. Make sure the person with SPD receives advance notice regarding a transition between environments or activities. It is also important to provide sensory activities during all transitions as well as upon entering a different environment. It is also important to encourage the person to participate in a sensory activity prior to starting their daily routine. There are quite a few slides in this presentation that will review possible sensory activities. Prompts regarding transitions may be verbal, gestural, or pictorial, and prompts may need to be given several times before the transition actually occurs in order to give the person with SPD enough time to prepare. A timer may also be helpful, and depending upon the person's sensory needs, you may consider a timer that does or does not make noise, but in fact uses lights, for example. Most people with and without SPD have transition routines. For example, think about how you transition from your professional self to your personal self. Think about the activities that allow you to make that transition smoothly. And think about what happens if you are not able to engage in those transition activities. Many people with SPD exhibit problematic behavior or agitation or noncompliance in response to making transitions between environments or activities. I worked with a young woman with autism and she was about 14 years old. She described transitions as walking through an electric fence. Essentially, she said that transitioning between environments and activities felt like she was being shocked. She described it as a rather painful experience. A transition routine was even more important for her because the impact of not having that routine was a bit more dramatic. It is essential to maintain a consistent daily routine for a person with SPD. If a person is overwhelmed by sensory input, decrease the demands of their daily routine until the person is no longer overwhelmed. Then gradually reintegrate that person into their daily routine. It is important to teach the person with SPD how to utilize coping skills to manage being overwhelmed by sensory input. Please note that sensory activities may also be used as coping skills. Sensory activities and coping skills must be built into the person's daily routine. In other words, they must be given the opportunity throughout their day to practice these skills. Once the person with SPD is comfortable with their daily routine, then it may be appropriate to help them tolerate changes in their daily routine by making small changes and teaching the person that using coping skills and sensory activities is an effective way to manage those changes in their daily routine. Providing the person with SPD with a sensory diet is an essential component of treatment planning. A sensory diet is a menu of individualized activities designed to appropriately meet a person's sensory needs, and these activities are evenly spaced throughout a person's day. These activities typically occur at least every 2 hours, which is often how long the benefit of a sensory activity can last. Providing a person with SPD with a sensory diet provides them with the opportunity to engage in appropriate sensory stimulation throughout the day and decreases the likelihood of a buildup of inappropriate or painful sensory stimulation that may result in problematic behavior. A sensory diet should be available in all environments for the person with SPD. It's also important to consider the same activity can increase or decrease sensory stimulation. However, it's about providing the right type of sensory stimulation. For example, a person may find a shower to be both relaxing and invigorating or stimulating. And that person may use the same activity for different purposes throughout the day. Psychotherapy is not an appropriate treatment for SPD. Additionally, medication is not an appropriate treatment for SPD. Medication can worsen the signs and symptoms of SPD. It is not addressing the problem, or it may dull the senses and increase the intensity of efforts to gain stimulation, for example. A sensory diet is one of the most effective treatments for SPD. The goal of a sensory diet is to bring a person's high or low level of arousal to an optimal level of arousal by organizing and processing a variety of sensory input and generating an adaptive response to that sensory input. Meeting a person's sensory needs helps that person improve their ability to complete activities of daily living. It also helps them intellectually, socially, and emotionally regarding development. It also improves their self-esteem, their ability to learn, and their achievement of developmental milestones within average limits. All environments should provide a sensory room, which is a designated room containing specific sensory equipment or activities to calm or stimulate a person. A sensory diet must be developed and monitored by a licensed occupational therapist trained in SPD. This is especially true in regard to vestibular activities, which could cause life-threatening harm that is shut down if the activities are overstimulating. I once worked with an occupational therapist who used the example of riding a roller coaster to explain shutdown. If any of you avoid roller coaster rides, think about the possible reasons. Oftentimes, people who avoid roller coaster rides often feel sick after the ride ends. Symptoms of sickness may include nausea, vomiting, dizziness, or an upset stomach. These types of symptoms may also occur in response to activities regarding the vestibular sense that are overstimulating. It is important to create a sensory diet with activities that seem more like everyday tasks and less like treatment. It is more effective for the person with SPD. This webinar provides lists of activities regarding sensory input for auditory, visual, oral, motor, tactile, olfactory, vestibular, and proprioceptive senses. Proprioceptive activities stimulate a person's joints and muscles. A person with hypersensitivity and hyposensitivity in the proprioceptive sense may use the same activities to either increase or decrease stimulation. The list of vestibular activities generally includes activities that increase stimulation to people with a hyposensitive vestibular sense. The last bullet on this list decreases stimulation to the vestibular sense. The last bullet includes avoiding movement or providing opportunities for slow movement. Again, vestibular activities must be supervised by an occupational therapist to avoid causing the person with SPD harm. Regarding tactile activities, the majority of suggested activities involve manipulating textures and vibrations. These activities typically increase stimulation to the tactile sense. The final bullet on the list involves decreasing stimulation to the tactile sense. And this includes encouraging the person to stand at the beginning or the end of the line, as well as sit at the end of a row of seats. Please keep in mind, many tactile activities can be made at home. It's also important to remember that when you find preferred clothing, buy lots of it. It may be hard to find in the future. Many auditory activities are designed to stimulate the auditory sense and practice identifying sounds. Other auditory activities are designed to muffle or eliminate auditory stimulation. Various visual activities, such as looking at flashing lights and lava lamps, increase visual stimulation. Other visual activities, such as stringing beads, increases eye-hand coordination, and doing a visual search, such as a word search, may increase visual discrimination. Visual discrimination is being able to identify one item from a group of items. If a person has hypersensitivity in the sense of vision, sunglasses or a baseball cap or other methods may be helpful to reduce the stimulation regarding their sense of vision. Various oral motor activities focus on the taste, texture, and temperature of food to either decrease or increase oral motor stimulation. Other oral motor activities, such as whistling or eating crunchy foods, can stimulate the muscles in the mouth and the jaw. The mouth and the jaw are the most sensitive parts of the body regarding the proprioceptive sense. Chewy tubes can be an alternative to putting inedible objects into a person's mouth in order to increase stimulation. However, a more natural and less stigmatizing approach may be desirable, such as using gum, chewy food, or crunchy food. Olfactory activities may increase or decrease stimulation to the olfactory sense, which is also known as the sense of smell. The list of suggested activities includes various smells or scents that may be used in a person to stimulate their sense of smell. Certain smells may also be used to mask other aversive smells. Certain olfactory activities, such as playing a guessing game with scratch and sniff stickers, may also help a person differentiate among smells. A person with difficulty differentiating among smells typically has hyposensitivity in the olfactory sense. These three videos depict three different people with sensory processing disorder. As you review each video, please attend to the person's sensory experiences. Specifically, were they positive or were they negative sensory experiences? Additionally, please attend to how the person managed or regulated their sensory input. Were their responses problematic or adaptive? And finally, think about ways you would suggest to help that person. For more information regarding SPD, please refer to the resources provided in this webinar. Thank you.